Greetings, fans of the Partial Historians. I am a very ill Dr. Radness.
And I am an extremely well, but rather tired Dr. Greenfield.
Why are you tired, Dr. G? Why?
Life. I couldn't possibly go into the details.
Oh, it's fascinating. But unfortunately, we're not going to be talking about Dr. G's social life today. I'm sorry, I lured you here under false pretenses. Instead, we're going to return to our line of emperors.
Yeah, and we're up to somebody relatively interesting.
Indeed.
Someone Hadrian. With facial hair.
Yeah, which is unusual.
It is, for Romans, yes.
Yes.
Why is that?
But he's going to be setting a new trend, because, you know, everyone wants to be like the dude in power. Beards become of a fashion after Hadrian.
Ah, yes. So, yeah, the beard becomes a thing after Hadrian.
Exactly,
yes.
Yeah. He sets
as
the trend.
As you do.
Now, I must apologise. I got a little bit carried away last episode.
Well, and I didn't pick you up on it either, so we're both to blame.
Yeah, we neglected to mention that Hadrian is married to Trajan's grandniece, not his niece, his grandniece.
That makes all the difference.
Yeah, it doesn't really, but nonetheless, felt I should correct us.
Well, yes. So Hadrian is married to a woman, Sabina.
Yes.
The grandniece of Trajan.
Yes.
And he's connected into the family. So when we talk about this period in Roman sort of principate history, which is known as the adoptive emperors, there's still kind of a little bit of a family connection.
There's less of a link between Nerva and Trajan than there is between Trajan and Hadrian.
Yes.
Yeah. But nonetheless, I mean, it's not like the most direct link, and it's not like Trajan necessarily had to adopt Hadrian.
No.
And this is the thing. We kind of left you on a mysterious point in this history. Yes, exactly. See, we talk about these adoptive emperors, but was Hadrian, in fact, adopted?
Yes, well, this is a point of controversy.
Yep.
This is something that all of the sources that we have for Hadrian, and there are several.
Not very good ones, but they're there.
Mention this fact, let's not call it a fact.
Yeah.
This idea that there was perhaps a lead time between when Trajan died and when the information about Hadrian's adoption came out.
Rumour has it, ooh, yeah.
Yes, rumour and conjecture. And central to these stories is Plotina.
Yes,
Trajan's wife.
Wow.
Wow, we're becoming the same person.
Oh, dear.
This is supposed to be a conversation.
It really wasn't planned, I assure you.
Goodness.
Okay, sorry, Plotina, yes. As sinister as her name sounds, perhaps.
And as severe as her hair may be.
Exactly. What was she up to?
Well, apparently, one of the rumours is that she was in love with Hadrian.
Which is unlucky for her, because, as you may recall from last time, we mentioned that Trajan, her husband, was quite fond of boys, as opposed to her, it would seem.
It would seem that Plotina has a poor taste in men. Well, if she likes Hadrian, I mean, she's sort of barking up the wrong tree all over again.
Exactly. Because Hadrian, as we will explore in more depth later, is also a massive fan of the boys.
Yes.
Yeah, even more so than Trajan, I think you would say.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yes,
this will become apparent.
Yeah, so whether she was or not, I mean, maybe he was just a favourite of hers.
Yeah, there seems to be, anyway, some sort of delay. And partially, this delay could be related to the fact that Trajan dies in the east.
Yeah.
As much as anything else.
In fact, point of note, Dr. G, Trajan, I believe, is the first emperor to die outside of Italy.
Wow.
So not only is he a foreigner, but he dies outside of Italy.
Wow.
Those foreigners.
I don't know what to do
the
with that
foreigners
sort of information.
And wicked ways.
You've just blown my mind.
I know, right? Anyway, so yeah. He's not anywhere near anything, really.
I suppose this is a nice segue into Hadrian being an outsider as well.
Yes, because Hadrian is our second emperor who is not a native Italian. Outrageous.
And some of our sources suggest that when he eventually makes it into the centre of the Roman world, and he gives a speech that people laugh at him because of his provincial accent.
And this is the weird thing about him, though, because he didn't really grow up in the provinces, did he, as far as we can tell?
No, not as far as we can tell. He's born in, what, Baetica? Or was it Italia?
Italica, I think it's Italica,
And,
or Talca.
Yeah. And so he's kind of, he moves very quickly from there into Italy, and as far as the sources seem to indicate, he's raised mostly in Rome.
Exactly. So where would he get this weird accent?
That's what happens when you're raised by a family of provincials.
Well, I have heard another suggestion.
Yeah. Do tell.
Okay. Because Hadrian, like Trajan, is a bit of a military man once his career gets up and running, I have heard it suggested that perhaps he picked up a bit of a brutish accent from the soldiers he was surrounded by.
Wow. Really?
You know, working class accent, eh?
Hanging out with the boys. Got to talk like the lads.
Exactly. And that might have been the accent that they were making fun of. But either way, it seems a bit improbable, I have to admit.
Both ways. Yeah.
But yes. Anyway, either way, Plotina. And she perhaps, the sources suggest, had a hand in orchestrating his...
Well, and Hadrian's early career, so like pre the elevation of Trajan, for instance, aligns with Trajan's to a certain degree.
Yes.
So,
I mean,
he wasn't
just out of the blues.
No, he's somebody who's part of like Trajan's extended family.
Yeah.
Somebody who's hanging around with that family for like 20 years or so.
Exactly.
And so somebody who is well known to Plotina, at least. He has several sort of stepping stones, if you like, in his career in the 90s, in that controversial period under Domitian, 94. He holds relatively a number of positions inside Rome, things to do with like judging litigation, to do with inheritance, hanging out and commanding officers of the equites.
Yeah. That's where it's at, my friend.
Being a bit of a fancy urban prefect for special feasts.
Growing his beard, you know.
Yeah, things like that. And he also has a military career as well.
Yes.
So he's got an established, like, nice Roman trajectory to what's going on.
My God, we did it again.
Maybe it's because we're one ill and / tired and we're sort of synchronized in some sense. This is interesting. I wonder if he'll continue.
We're both throwing down.
But he becomes a military tribune in sort of 96, 97. So like
crucial
that,
years.
Yeah, it's crucial years.
Yes.
Bit of a change over there. Looking after a few different legions over in Moesia Inferior.
Nice.
On the Black Sea.
Delightful. And this is kind of a Trajan's stomping ground a bit, isn't it?
A little bit
of a connection there.
And so we have this connection between Hadrian and Trajan when Trajan's sort of announced as being adopted by Nerva.
Sure.
Hadrian's like, I'm sending you congratulations and I'm going to do everything I can to get there to give them to you in person.
I'm hitching my wagon to your star.
Yeah, which is interesting because his wagon breaks on the way.
Sorry.
That's in the sources.
Don't make me laugh.
That's for real. Oh, yeah. No. Coughing. I'm sorry. My apologies.
Okay, sorry. Apologize, listeners.
In any case, it's in 100 CE that Hadrian ends up married to this Sabina.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's not entirely smooth sailing, though, is it, with Trajan and Hadrian? This is the thing.
No. Well, apparently Trajan wasn't really that interested in Hadrian marrying Sabina. Yes. Rumour might suggest that those two are having a relationship.
That old chestnut.
No.
But, you know, it seems slightly more realistic with these ones.
I mean, there's definitely potential there.
Yeah.
Trajan has a reputation for it. Hadrian has a reputation for
it.
Now, whether it's just like our source material just sort of they always jumping on the same bandwagon.
They always say this sort of thing. And it's like you said once before, I think, this whole idea of, you know, the transmission of power.
And if we're going to have sexual invective coming through with these guys.
Exactly.
This seems a perfect vehicle for it.
Because, I mean, this is... I mean, I suppose this might be a good point or unusual point. I can't really make up my mind. To address the idea that Trajan, we know, hugely popular. Everyone's like, woo, hey,
Trajan. He's the new Augustus.
And you would think that Hadrian would also be that way, given his connection to Trajan and how Nerva benefited from that and all that kind of stuff. But not really.
No.
Hadrian is a weird little... He's a weird little filling in our five adoptive emperors' sandwich.
So one of the ways in which scholarship, perhaps presumptuously, referred to these adoptive emperors is the good emperors.
Yeah.
But Hadrian doesn't really fit the mold of good, per se.
Yeah, and this is a weird thing. I mean, this is like, I suppose, I'm sorry, I'm delving a little bit into the history of scholarship here.
Oh, please do.
But yeah, this whole idea of the five good emperors, it's something that it seems to have sort of cropped up and particularly taken hold in sort of, it comes out of sort of Edward Gibbon's seminal work a little bit.
Danger, danger.
Yeah, that's all right, I'm going there. Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire in many, many volumes by Edward Gibbon. But even so, even, and then it creeps into textbooks and then it becomes a thing, an established thing.
Idea.
Yeah.
But we're going to break that idea.
Yeah.
Other people have even before so, us, even, but, you know, even, it needs to be broken.
Even back with Gibbon, even he seems to have been aware that Hadrian was a little bit of an odd nugget in this case.
There are a number of reasons for this.
Yeah.
It's partially to do with events that happen just after he enters into the emperorship.
Which we shall get to.
Yes. And partly to do with some things that happen towards the end.
Yeah.
And some varied scattered things in the middle.
Yes, exactly.
But the middle is considered to be better overall than the start and the finish.
Yeah, because quite a lengthy rule, again, you know. Yes. Like Trajan, it's kind of actually pretty much the same amount as Trajan, you know.
Mm.
And like Trajan, Hadrian is out of Rome quite a bit.
He is. He's doing vast tours.
Yeah. He's a wanderer. Oh, yes, he's a wanderer.
No.
He goes around. Okay, yeah.
Somebody spare me.
Sorry, I'm a bit high on cough medicine. But yes, you would think, therefore, that maybe the Senate would be happy with this, like they were with Trajan.
Yes.
But no.
Have an emperor out of town makes for a happy Senate. But no. No.
While the emperor's away, the Senate will play.
But not in this case.
No.
And it's to do with, it seems, his policies to do with expansion, amongst other things. Yes. Trajan was all about bigger is better, let's have more land.
Yeah.
And one of Hadrian's...
Let's conquer Parthia and Arabia.
I can do it. I can take Syria. All of these things that Trajan does in terms of expansion and being really proactive with this. And Hadrian gets in and is immediately like, no. We don't have the resources for this. Pull back.
I'm sorry that this is a bit unfeasible, you'll see. You haven't quite crunched the numbers correctly.
It was debilitating, I suppose, from a senatorial point of view, because part of the way that you promote yourself is getting yourself into these positions after these lands have been conquered and finding ways to derive tax revenue, amongst other things.
She should be using her flesh rabbits there. Tax revenue.
Oink,
oink. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, once you've reached the quota, you can skim off the top.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's legitimate. In any case, there is severe backlash from this idea of pulling out of certain areas. And, like, sort of within a really short span of time, within, like, the sort of 2 to 5 years of Hadrian being in power,
he's
pulled out of almost all of Trajan's land,
which
gains.
Is crazy. I mean, it's really quite, it's so unusual because he doesn't even wait to like establish himself in power.
He's just like, dude, policies change, guys.
Exactly. It's a new time. It's a new era. Get used to it.
Yeah.
You don't like it? Hit the highway.
And it seems that some people get angsty about that and decide that maybe they should kill him.
Whoops.
There are many conspiracies leveled at the reign of Hadrian.
Yeah.
Now, this might be partly to do with the diffuse nature of the source material that we have.
Yeah, and I suppose we should perhaps address that
a
little bit.
Yes, I think so.
I mean, okay, Hadrian's reign is great because you've got all these people like Suetonius, who we've been talking about, possibly Tacitus, maybe Juvenal, Dio. They're all writing.
They're all writing.
Yeah, during this time. And yet, nothing. We have nothing.
Surprisingly, very little remains. Dio is perhaps a particular loss because we know he does write about this period.
Yeah.
And
all we have left is the epitome.
Yes, there's sort of this sort of fragmentary compilation of his work, you know, much more condensed version.
Made much later,
With a lot of the detail, obviously.
Missing.
Never to be found again.
Yeah, and Tacitus, if he was writing during this period, doesn't write about this period. And Suetonius, we're pretty sure he was writing during this period because we're pretty sure he worked for Hadrian, doesn't seem to be writing about Hadrian in any surviving works. Bummer.
So what we're left with is sort of like 4th century compilations.
Jesus. slim pickings.
Most famously, a compilation piece known as the Historia Augusta.
Yes, and I think we'll explain more about that tricky, tricky source in our next episode. But suffice to say for now, it's not the most reliable thing we've ever come across.
We're dealing with hazy territory, even for ancient historians, who are always skating on the edge of not knowing anything at all.
I know, it's just so bizarre. And that's the thing, even when Hadrian's in power and he is, you know, the guy that you would presumably be writing histories about, we can't always even track his movements.
No.
He's here, he's there, he's everywhere.
We think he goes on about 4 grand tours.
How sophisticated.
He does a lot of touring. He's really interested in shoring up the provinces and reaffirming the relationship of the provinces that he's decided to hold on to with Rome.
And that seems like
perhaps at the expense of Rome.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, like Trajan, Hadrian's not in Italy when Trajan dies and he has to orchestrate this whole succession thing. And that's where he, where at his post is supposedly where he receives the letter from Trajan saying, "Hey, you're adopted. Guess what? In 3 days, I'm going to die." How convenient.
Who'd have thought?
Exactly. He's so all over the place. And he seems to have a particular affinity for certain places.
He does, he does. So one of the things that Hadrian is famously known for is being a Philhellene.
That means he likes all things Greek.
Ties in very conveniently to the rumours about his sexuality.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's probably not a surprise to say that Hadrian did not have a happy marriage. Sabina seems to have been a remarkably unfulfilled young woman.
Wait for it. Yeah. Let me find my source material on this because it's a doozy, to be honest.
Because Hadrian, even more than Trajan, as we said, he really likes dem boys more than he likes dem women.
and Sabina is reported as going as far as saying in some of the sources that we do have extant that she tried all strategies available to her to prevent falling pregnant to him because she thought he was inhuman.
Yeah, that's pretty harsh. And basically they end up sort of not really seeing much of each other eventually.
Probably for the best, given that's the way that she feels.
Exactly, yeah. It's like, I think there's even some reference Hadrian saying, it's my birthday, Sabina's at the villa, not near me. But at least she did send him a present, apparently.
So
they weren't on a particularly happy footing, which perhaps will explain later why Hadrian has no
also
heir.
Referred to him as the bane of the human race.
That does seem rather
that's intense. and this story perhaps could form a nice parallel to one of his most well-known young lovers.
Are you talking about the A-man?
Antinous? Yes, I am.
The youth.
We don't know quite how young. But suffice it to say that he's travelling around with Hadrian on one of these grand tours.
Yes. And Hadrian's quite besotted with this young man.
Very much so. Yeah. Apparently writes a good deal of love poetry.
Ah, yes, because Hadrian likes a bit of poetry, by the way. BTW. FYI, you know.
If you feel a comparison to Nero coming on, hold that in your mind, dear listener.
Hold it.
In any case, he has a young lover, and unfortunately, and if only we knew the circumstances, this young lover drowns in the Nile whilst the whole party is in Egypt.
And it is the most bizarre story, because this is someone that Hadrian's supposed to be, like, cuckoo in love for.
Yes.
And yet we have suggestions that maybe Hadrian sacrificed him.
Ew.
Yeah, in some sort
of... Why?
At some, like, witch doctor's suggestion. Of course, there are... There's
and then immediately regretted it.
Yeah, exactly. Whoops, that was the love of my life. My bad. Yeah.
Hadrian goes so far as to found a city at the location of the young man's death.
Oh, that's so sad. And that's the thing, it's kind of a bit of a turning point in his reign, isn't it, really?
As far as
some people...
It's ostentatious, the way that he goes about dealing with his grief.
Do you mean ostentatious?
Yes. Yeah. What did I say? Oh, goodness. I really am. I apologize.
You were almost there.
So he was asking, he sought veneration of Antinous as a god.
And the Greek cities were quite happy to go along with that.
Yes.
They're all good at that.
And statues were erected.
Yes.
at numerous locations.
Mm, why not?
Coins were minted with the young boy's portrait.
This is quite public. You know, like the Romans...
This is an overt public display of imperial grief.
Yeah, and like...
For a lover.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the Romans might have started to be a little bit more open-minded or just look the other way about certain
things. I wonder if this is part of the senatorial disaffection.
Yeah, but, like, they're not usually big on publicising the fact that you're having sex with a dude.
Yeah, that's my point entirely.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. you can kind of see how Hadrian might have rubbed people the wrong way.
Mm. Oh, I don't know. We didn't just go there, did we?
No. Sorry, it's a crossover again. But anyway, so yes, it's kind of a bit of he seems to be in grief and sort of a bit bitter about this for a long time.
Yes.
Yeah.
And obviously this puts a certain colour over the whole reign in a way. It's sort of... Not that it necessarily explains the poor relationship between Hadrian and Sabina, but it certainly is something to keep into account when looking at the way that that plays out versus the way that he is known as a lover of Greece. He becomes an archon of Athens. He becomes a citizen of Athens.
Yeah, it doesn't even, like, he builds a temple for them that they've long wanted completed.
Yes.
And he gets a special little title, doesn't he? Olympius or something.
Ooh.
Yeah, like Jupiter himself.
Yes. Yeah, so on the one hand, we have this sort of, this wandering emperor who still the Senate doesn't like, but somebody who's engaging in a lot of building works in provinces. Obviously, Hadrian is famous for Hadrian's Wall, indeed, amongst other things.
And this is, I suppose Hadrian's Wall kind of ties in nicely to Hadrian really drilling in this idea that we're not going beyond a certain point in the empire.
There are limits, and here is my line in the sand.
Exactly. Or my stone wall in the muddy area.
Yes.
That is Scotland, Britain. Mm. I mean, and that's the thing, like, Hadrian's Wall that you may have visited when you go to a Great Britain was not the only one of these constructions. Mm-hmm. He built them all over the place. It just happens that the one in Britain was made out of stone, and it survived somewhat. Well, I mean, yeah.
Better than the others. Out.
Yeah. Like, in Germany, it was made of timber, so you can imagine how well that lasted.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, obviously it would last
a while. At least you know he's serious about his policy.
Yeah, well, I mean, even, like, when Trajan had all these, you know, conquests, you were actually allowed to expand the pomerium in Rome itself.
Yes.
You know, the sacred...
This is very important. There's a sacred boundary around the city, which as you expand Roman territory, you're also permitted to expand the sacred...
Now, Trajan did not do this.
Ooh.
Okay. Hadrian could presumably, I suppose, have done it in connection with Trajan's conquests. But instead, he chose to... sort of emphasize the existing pomerium.
Mm.
You know, he basically said, now we're going to just
set that in stone, shall we?
Let's go over that line again.
Again.
Let's bold it.
I want some more pillars in place to just mark out the pomerium.
Yeah, so a lot of the things he does are really just cementing it in place, that we are not going to be expanding the empire.
Have you guys been listening?
Let me be very clear about this. And who, Dr. G, is famous for this non-expansionist point of view?
Well, this is where you get your comparison to Augustus.
Aha! Indeed.
But to me, they're apples and oranges.
Well, yes, I think it's... I mean, if there is that connection, it might perhaps be a bit of wishful thinking.
But perhaps this is one way in which Hadrian is trying to emulate the one that everyone wants to emulate.
Yeah, well, I mean, I do recall reading somewhere that Hadrian actually had a portrait of Augustus on his signet ring or one of his seal rings.
Oh, how delightfully
And it quaint. Was, in fact, it is in Suetonius's life of Augustus that we get the story about Augustus saying, you know what, maybe we should leave the empire. It's getting a little out of hand.
Nudge, which we... Hadrian, are you reading this?
Exactly. Was Suetonius sucking up to Hadrian? Or was he just highlighting that story of Augustus's reign?
Which way does it go? Nobody knows.
Who knows? Is it a coinkydink? We'll never know. But it's interesting. It's just an interesting thing to note away.
Yes. So amid the conspiracies, amid the travelling about, amid the hating the wife thing, amid the boy lovers.
The boy lovers dying tragically.
Hadrian needs to find an heir.
Indeed.
He doesn't have any children by Sabina.
No.
Definitely not.
And I mean, he'd want to choose carefully, because this is the funny thing about Hadrian. I mean, he basically, you know, he gets off on the wrong foot with the Senate, because at the beginning of his reign, there is this conspiracy in which four fairly prominent people end up being put to death.
Mm.
Not by Hadrian, according to our sources, but by the Senate.
And nevertheless, Hadrian cops the blame.
Exactly. So this kind of sets his reign off on a bad note with the Senate.
So even though he does all of those good emperor things of, like, waiving debts and helping people out and giving out gifts. None of that seems to count for very much for him.
He's not bad. I mean, his building program is huge. I mean, even in Rome itself, anyone who's ever been to the Pantheon, I think so.
that was one of his.
Yes. The one that you see now, even though it has someone else's name on it, is Hadrian's work.
Mm.
You know, he helped out that building. And also the Castel Sant'Angelo, otherwise known as Hadrian's Mausoleum. He's not related to the city. Like, his building program was
huge. The Senate wasn't very happy about that one either, I'm afraid.
Yeah, but, you know, nonetheless. His building program was huge. And he also, you know, restored a lot of things, particularly, like, you know, Augustus's Areopagus and that sort of thing. He could be quite charming. He was extremely intelligent.
Mm.
According to our sources, even the ones that... You know,
even the ones that sort of are offensive about him in particular ways acknowledge that he has particular talents and multiple talents, and he's very intelligent and good at what he does.
Yeah, I mean, he reads apparently very widely, can quote from, you know, these things that people have never even heard from. This is according to the sources anyway.
He can apparently
dictate and talk to someone and write all at the same time. Like, his administrative skills are formidable.
Should I mention that he...
You steal my reading.
He also reformed the Imperial Post. I'm on a run here. No, but I'm sorry, but, like, way to follow in the footsteps of Nerva, the original.
And the best. Oh my god, we just again. Yeah, so anyway, he does all this good stuff. And, you know, he's also very careful to give donatives to the right people.
Yes.
You know? He's trying really hard to get on people's good side.
And yet...
he does not.
No, sadly.
And, yeah, and I mean, again, when it comes to picking an heir... ugh. Ay, caramba.
He doesn't seem to have much luck with that either.
No. I mean, that's the thing. It's so funny. Even for a guy who can't have a baby, he can't even pick an heir.
He realises that he's getting quite ill in about 136.
Yeah, and this illness apparently makes him a bit cranky. Yeah.
Yes.
He becomes disgusted with life.
He asks somebody to stab him to put him out of his misery. Everybody refuses to help him out. In any case, he decides that he needs an heir. He settles on a guy, Lucius Commodus.
Not a popular choice.
No. The choice was surprising.
Yeah. There were other people, I mean...
mostly because Commodus was ill with tuberculosis when he was chosen.
I know how he feels. But it's also the fact that he was kind of a bit of a surprising choice, wasn't he?
He was.
Because Hadrian kind of...
Hadrian has relatives who are interested.
Yeah. Very interested.
Very interested relatives who are sort of like, well, I know the adoptive thing's been happening, but... I'm a male relation, and while I might not be directly aligned, you know, I'm part of the extended family, like you were part of Trajan's extended family.
Exactly.
So some people get their noses out of joint when Hadrian picks somebody outside of the family.
And, yeah, this is where the end of his reign is kind of tainted with bad feeling. Because
his family gets annoyed at him.
Yeah, so annoyed that they decide to conspire against him. Unfortunately for them, conspiracy does not work out.
Yeah, they get caught.
Yeah, but then bad for Hadrian, because then he has to kind of, you know, organize their untimely demise.
Yeah, so we have Lucius Servianus and Pedanius Fuscus.
Yeah, now Fuscus was the younger guy.
The grand nephew.
Indeed. And Servianus was quite old by this time.
Yes.
So that's another reason
why. These two band together, and they're like, we're family, maybe pick one of us. Hadrian's like, I've noticed you're trying to kill me, now you must die.
Exactly. And this is the thing, Servianus being so old, I mean, some of the sources say he's like 90 years old, that, you know, it's not really a good look to be old, like, old dudes kill themselves.
Yeah, that's not a display of your power.
No. Mm. And so things end on rather a sour note And you know what, Dr. G? I think we should leave them hanging to find out who will actually succeed Hadrian. Because he does eventually die.
He's nearly dead.
Yeah. Kind of the same age as Trajan. Weird, huh?
Yeah.
So
ooh, a suspenseful end.
Despite being what charming and next? Intelligent and
surviving multiple conspiracies.
Exactly, and being a builder extraordinaire. Check out his villa at Tivoli. I guarantee you'll be jealous.
The Tivoli Villa is
he dies
special.
In rather sad circumstances.
Well, I mean, he dies where every good Roman would like to die.
Mm.
He dies in Bay, which is
nice.
Like the pleasure. Like it's where Romans go for their summer holiday break.
We're all going on a summer holiday.
No.
Sorry. Anyway, all right, yeah, so he dies. In a nice place.
He dies, but we're leaving some of the mystery for next episode.
What will happen next? Stay tuned.